It's late April. And Grandpa has gone forth to sow. He's doing it in the old-fashioned way. Almost like the picture illustrating the parable in Grandma's big Bible. Or the painting on Grandma and Grandpa's wall of the French peasants by Millet. He has a bag of seed fastened at his waist and a box hanging on his chest. He walks along cranking a wheel on the box, and it sprays the grass seed in a wide arc around him. His arm goes back and forth as if he's playing a fiddle. His walk is more of a stumble. This is partly because Grandpa's usual walk is something of a stumble, slanting forward and going fast. It's partly because Grandpa is old, almost 80. And finally, because a blanket of snow covers the ground. "This is $1,000 snow," Grandpa had said to Jackie as she stood on his porch with him the night before. They'd watched the fat, wet flakes drifting down. Already, the lawn was covered with white. "It's not cold enough to do any damage," Grandpa had continued, "and the moisture will water all the seedlings in the most gentle and gradual way possible. A spring snow like this is a benediction of the Lord." They'd watched some more, and Grandpa's throat made its little droning, thinking sound, like a chicken. "There's a field at the hill farm," he'd said after a bit. "It's due to be seeded, but we can't get the machinery on it now. The seed would do splendidly in this snow. I shall have to sow it by hand." The field is a large one. Grandpa finishes. He's tired. While he was sowing, the pain returned to his chest. It's the familiar burning pain that he's had off and on for some time now, but has told no one about. Dr. Thayer. He knows the name. Angina. Today the pain is strong. He climbs in his car and drives back to town, not stopping at Ron's place or the dairy. At home, he kisses Grandma on her couch, goes to the kitchen, and says to Effie, "Please call Dr. Thayer. Tell him I should see him. I have some pain." Effie delivers the message and reports he's at the hospital. He says to come over there. Grandpa goes upstairs, takes off his heavy work shoes. He takes off his overalls, his work shirt, his one-piece long underwear. He takes a bath. He puts on clean underwear, a clean shirt, a good suit. The pain stays with him. He gets in the car and drives to the hospital. He asks for Dr. Thayer. They take one look at him and rush him to the emergency room. He has had a heart attack. Dr. Thayer calls the farm. Daddy and Mother are in Colorado with friends on a vacation trip. Nobody knows how to reach them. The state police are put onto the job of finding the car. Jackie is on her bicycle near Beloit College. Patsy swoops up to her in the car. "Grandpa's in the hospital," she shouts out the window. Jackie veers and changes course. At the hospital, Patsy is there, and Craig, and their cousin Jerry. Grandpa is in bed with oxygen tubes in his nose. Jackie is startled and filled with foreboding. But Grandpa is cheerful. "He's not in much pain," he says. He makes them feel cheerful. They all chatter cheerfully among themselves and to Grandpa. "Will you rub my feet?" Grandpa asks Jackie. "They're cold." Jackie stands at the foot of the hospital bed and rubs her grandfather's feet. The Colorado police flag down Daddy at Pike's Peak. He rushes from Pueblo to Denver and catches a midnight plane. He leaves Mother to pack and follow on the train. The friends will continue the trip with the car. When Daddy gets to the hospital the next morning, he finds Grandpa sitting up in bed, thinking about his plans for spring. He has his farm books and maps around him. They are starting a new enterprise, The contour plow and other machinery are coming on May 10th, Grandpa's birthday, to terrace all the fields at Chez Nous and the hill farm. The fields on Grandpa's maps are marked out in the flowing lines of the contour levels. Grandpa reviews the work with Ronald. A red-headed nurse comes in at frequent intervals to take care of Grandpa and chat for a moment. Grandpa can't praise her highly enough. She's Betty Beadle, daughter of Grandpa's former farm manager, Leonard Beadle. Grandpa and Daddy have watched her grow up from a baby. Trevor arrives, and Grandpa speaks of his life to his two sons. He says it's been full and rich and happy and filled with every blessing. Were he able to do it over again, he would do things pretty much the way he's done them. If it's the Lord's will to take me now, he says, I am prepared. To Ronald, it doesn't look as if it's the time. His father is much too active, too vital. In a vibrant voice, Grandpa recites from memory Tennyson's Crossing the Bar, sunset and evening star, and one clear call for me, and may there be no moaning at the bar when I put out to sea. But such a tide as moving seems asleep, too full for sound or foam, when that which came from out the boundless deep turns again home. Twilight and evening bell, and after that the dark, and may there be no sadness of farewell when I embark. For though from out this time and place the flood has borne me far, I hope to meet my pilot face to face when I have crossed the bar. And when he finishes, Ronald and Trevor's eyes are wet. Grandpa's are wet, too. He prays with them. Throughout the day, Grandpa has many visitors. Craig and Jerry come again. At one point, they are alone with Grandpa. He recites Crossing the Bar to them, too. They talk about life and about death. Cubbies, says Grandpa to his grandsons, I do not know how I know so surely, but I know that I shall live forever. Jackie comes again, too. She brings a painting she's just finished in art class. It's of a straddle-legged calf, ducking its head and sucking on its mother. The pair are standing by a golden straw stack, and she's painted the sky a rich brown. Grandpa laughs silently at the picture. Then he critiques the anatomy of the cow, but he doesn't object to the brown sky, as her professor had. He has her place the picture on the window ledge, where he can see it. And then Jackie rubs and rubs his cold feet some more. Liberta Julius, from the big house, sits with Grandpa into the evening. She and Grandpa have a special bond. When Liberta's young daughter was killed several years before, Grandpa was a strength and comfort. And every morning when he comes out to the farm to work, he stops in the big house kitchen for a chat. He calls Liberta Cookie. He says to her from his hospital bed, Cookie, I feel that I shall live forever and ever. There is strength in his voice. The next morning, Daddy gets up and goes to meet Mother's train. Grandpa has been so well the night before that it doesn't occur to him to call the hospital first. Craig and Jerry come from Craig's early clarinet lesson to the hospital. They walk in jauntily and stop. Betty Beadle is bending over Grandpa. They catch her eye, questioning her. Betty nods. The grandsons stand crying while Grandpa gasps his last breaths. Daddy is paged at the Northwestern station. Jackie hears at college, leaves her class, pedals over to Grandpa and Grandma's house. Everyone is there when she arrives. Grandma is sitting on her couch, rocking back and forth, wailing and wailing. Daddy is gone. Oh, my precious Daddy is gone. Her sons sit on either side of her, holding her. Mother greets Jackie with brimmed eyes. Daddy acknowledges her presence. His eyes have tears, too. So do Trevor's and everybody's. Jackie feels cold and numb and sick at heart. She's never seen the family like this before. There have been only a few deaths. Aunt Ida, Aunt Della, but never a death when Grandpa was not there. There has never been a time in her almost 21 years when Grandpa has not been here. "Daddy's gone," wails Grandma. Jackie can't stand it. She goes out and climbs the big pine tree in the backyard until her weight will let her get no higher. She sways there amid the new needles. She's in shock. Scenes with Grandpa flood her mind. Grandpa, late last Christmas, reciting for the family not a Christmas or new birth poem, but Crossing the Bar. Grandpa coming back from the dentist last week, shouting, "Don't worry, you won't have to grind up my feed. These old teeth will last me the rest of my life." Grandpa, last fall, in his living room, reading aloud an essay he was sending his old friend and longtime employee, DeWitt Griffiths, who was dying in a Madison hospital. It was the last of several letters where he was comparing life to the seasons. Grandpa saying, "This one is so hard for me to write because I, too, am in the late autumn of my life. Winter cannot be far off." And Jackie sees now with clarity what she has refused to recognize then, that Grandpa wanted to talk about his essay with someone. He wanted to talk about the winter, the end of life, the end of his own life. Grandpa wanted the comfort and talk and acknowledgement of death. But she hadn't done it. She was afraid to think about Grandpa dying. No one in the room had done it, for Grandpa was always the comforter. She's glad she went to the hospital both days, that she brought the picture, that she touched him. She's glad she was able to do something for him, to rub his feet. She realizes that was another sign of death that she hadn't recognized. Grandpa's feet cold from lack of circulation. And she sees Grandpa in his chair, reading the page she wrote to him while she twists his hair into a Cupid doll curl. Grandpa, pleased and laughing and saying, "Yes, the round barn has a lot to say." She should have grabbed a pencil then and there and found out from Grandpa the things that only he could tell her. The things she knows just bits and pieces of. The things she doesn't know at all. Now it's too late. Too late. And it's too late to tell him in words everything he's meant to her. She had just assumed he would always be here. She hasn't faced the fact that life will stop, even for those you love, for those who are always here. She hugs the trunk of the pine tree and weeps till she's exhausted. And then she rests with her head against the bark, her eyes closed. She feels blank and empty. After a while, a picture creeps into her mind. It's not one she has ever seen, yet it's as clear as if she had. Grandpa is walking over the snowy field by the hill farm woods. The April sun warms his sparse hair and makes the snow glitter with a million diamonds. A meadowlark is singing on a fence post. Grandpa has a bag like the ones in the Bible pictures, and he is rhythmically casting alfalfa seed ahead of him so that it dusts the snow. His footprints and the seed on the snow mark where he has already been. Words accompany the picture, the words of the parable. A sower went forth to sow. A sower went forth to sow. Over and over, the words go through Jackie's mind as she watches Grandpa going back and forth over his last field. Grandpa is the sower, she knows. He has always been the sower. If he had to die now, it's fitting that he died sowing. and the seed has not fallen on the rocks or the wayside or among the brambles, at least not much of it, but on good earth that he has prepared, Waukesha loam over gravel earth. The seed has sprung up, and it's in the barn and the silo and the Ames. It's the cows and the pigs and the chickens. It's the alfalfa and the Veland oats and hybrid seed corn. It's the milkmen and the barn hands and the farm hands, the Tri-Y boys and the 4-H'ers. It's all the children all over town who have grown up on milk produced by the baby's milkman. It's the people in his early churches at Judah and Oregon and Poinette, and the people in the church that has been his whole life. Everyone whom he has shown by his example how to love, how to have life as well as a living. Most of all, it is his family, Daddy and Mother and her aunts and uncles, and the grandchildren, her cousins, and Joan and Patsy and Craig and herself. They are the seed springing up on the good soil. Jackie stirs and opens her eyes. She feels bleak, but no longer quite so forsaken. Grandpa has sown, but what will the harvest be? She can grow true, if she will, and become a sower herself. She climbs stiffly down from the top of the tree. The shining snow and the solitary sower are still in her mind's eye as she goes back to her people in the fullness of the empty house.